This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. What if comparing car insurance rates was as easy as putting on your favorite podcast? With Progressive, it is. Just visit the Progressive website to quote with all the coverages you want. You'll see Progressive's direct rate, then their tool will provide options from other companies so you can compare. All you need to do is choose the rate and coverage you like. Quote today at progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Comparison rates not available in all states or situations. Prices vary based on how you buy.
You don't just live in your home. You live in your neighborhood as well. So when you're shopping for a home, you want to know as much about the area around it as possible. Luckily, Homes.com has got you covered. Each listing features a comprehensive neighborhood guide from local experts. Everything you'd ever want to know about a neighborhood, including the number of homes for sale, transportation, local amenities, cultural attractions, unique qualities, and even things like median lot size and a noise score. Homes.com. We've done your homework.
Looking to improve your diet in the new year? Try seeing a personal dietitian with Nourish. Nourish has hundreds of dietitians who specialize in a variety of health concerns, including weight loss, gut health, and more. Meet with your dietitian online and message them anytime through the Nourish app. Nourish accepts hundreds of insurance plans. 94% of patients pay $0 out of pocket. Find your personal dietitian at usenourish.com. That's usenourish.com.
Here we go.
Jake and Josh are here
to analyze the game they love
for the team they love.
This is another Dolphins podcast. Here's your host, Jake Mendel and Josh Houts.
Thank you for pressing play on another Dolphins podcast. And today we are kicking the doors down on part two of our free agency primer, focusing specifically on how the Miami Dolphins may create some cap space ahead of the 2025 league year, which begins on March 12th. We had Kat join us for part one of this series where we discussed some looming decisions, potential targets for the Dolphins, and all that fun stuff. I've linked to that show in this description, but today, joining us on our first show since the Eagles stomped out the Chiefs in the Super Bowl, Dustin Godin, what's going on, man?
Hey, guys. Yeah, happy to be here. Happy to watch, that even elite quarterbacks can't, just put the entire team on their back under 75% pressure rates and happen to win the game. There's some ref help that didn't happen as usual, that, whatever. But still, I think the casual football fan had an opportunity there to learn some stuff at expectations from the quarterback position.
Joshua Houts, we haven't seen you in a little while. How you feeling, man? You look great.
Yeah, I don't know if I look great, but I feel much better. And I just want to give a shout out to you for holding the fort down, because, there would be no another Dolphins podcast without you, Jake. So this is our first time back, and I'm surprised that you and I both picked the Philadelphia Eagles to win this. So before the playoffs started, we both predicted the Eagles would win. I don't know if I truly believed it heading into that game, but they put an absolute ass whooping down. And we got to tip our hat to a former colleague of ours, former defense coordinator Vic Fangio, because he just called a game of his life against who I thought was arguably the greatest quarterback of all time. But I might have to temper expectations on that a little bit.
With Kellen Moore officially becoming the head coach of the Saints on Monday, it's looking more and more like the Miami Dolphins are going to have continuity at defensive coordinator. It's expected. We're Dolphin fans. We know it's never set in stone until the stone is actually set, but Anthony Weaver is expected to return next season, and that's all good and fun. But Josh, you just touched on it. I want to kind of talk about Miami's former defensive coordinator. No, we're not talking Josh Boyer. I don't think anybody expected Vic Fangio to be bad in Philly, but guys, I got to be honest, seeing him win a Super Bowl, definitely, feeling pretty salty after that.
Yeah, I felt salty when it all went down, right? We remember Javon Holland kicking rocks. We know that, we all kind of felt like he was only coming here for a year, right? We knew his heart was in Philadelphia. We knew he was eventually going to go on, but to see him go on in his first year to have, the number one defense to absolutely stymie Patrick Mahomes, they had no answer. And we know that defense is set, right? They sit there every year and they just kind of wait as Howie Roseman lands the next defensive end that just falls into his lap. The way the Philadelphia Eagles are built is just perfect, to be completely honest. But then to get Vic Fangio in there, that defense looked unstoppable. And I don't even know if I, Vic Fangio, big fan. I thought I wanted him back when Brian Flores was hired. I've always been a Vic Fangio fan. I don't even know if I knew that he had this type of, this capability. So it was crazy to watch Patrick Mahomes in complete disarray the entire game.
Yeah, I'm totally with you, Josh. And especially when it comes to, you know, going back a couple of years where, you know, it was first reported that McDaniel came out and was like, yeah, or I guess he didn't ever say it publicly, but there were all kinds of rumors that he wanted Fangio, but he was saddled to, you know, keep Boyer for one more year. And then, you know, we go through one year with Boyer and it didn't turn out that great. And look, Fangio's coming down, super excited. And truth be told, you know, the season was pretty good with Fangio. We did have, you know, a lot of, you know, injuries under there. I do fully buy into the his heart was always in Philadelphia thing. And I do think that probably impacted some of the relationships with the guys on the team. And if you're an employee and you feel like your boss is not in it for you, he's just in it for a paycheck, you're much less likely to trust what he's preaching, trust what he's trying to, you know, coach you. So I think that plays a big factor in some of the guys' responses to, you know, not only him wanting to change the way they do things. I know a number of them were like, he was playing me out of position or, you know, that kind of stuff. But yeah, it is a bit salty, you know, being a fan of Fangio and, you know, going all those years of saying, oh, he's the godfather of modern defense. Like, and then all of a sudden, you know, it's a one and done, and then he goes and wins the Super Bowl, you know, with just an absolutely fantastic performance in the big game.
It's so hard to look at how that Eagles defense performed. I mean, Mahomes, it seemed like every single play he tried to, I'm going to step up in the pocket, I'm going to try to escape. Every instinct Mahomes has developed throughout his entire career, the Eagles said, no, you are not going to be allowed to play like that. And I just look at that 2023 season and I get so damn sad because they were doing that without pressuring. The Eagles were not pressuring Patrick Mahomes. You know what another really good defense that didn't pressure or blitz a lot was? Christian Wilkins, Zach Sealer, Bradley Chubb, and Jalen Phillips. And you sprinkle in some Andrew Van Ginkle, you had Raekwon, like, God, that defense was set up so well to succeed. And I think that's where some of my saltiness comes from, because I do feel like that Titans game is going to be that sliding door moment where you had this Fangio defense, you had it playing the way you need it to play to be successful. Dustin, you mentioned the injuries, but God, man, like, I just think about that. Like, there are so many. The Dolphins haven't won a playoff game in 20 years, but wasn't it the 2023 season? Preseason where they had the practice, the joint practices between the Eagles and the Dolphins, and they were talking about how, like, hey, we both feel like we could meet in the Super Bowl, and every team is talking about that in the preseason, but they pushed their chips on the table with Tyreek Hill, Bradley Chubb, you had Vic Fangio coming in there, and I honestly thought, like, there were a lot of similarities between these two teams, how they move around in the draft. I mean, Stephen Ross desperately wants Chris Greer to be Howie Roseman. Like, you talk about how Howie Roseman, he grew up with the Eagles, right? Chris Greer's been here since 2016. It's somebody that just has been there for so long. They understand how the business operates. And that's just, man, it's just that sliding door moment. But I wanted to ask you guys, social media is in such a weird spot where it's everybody just kind of wants to dunk on each other and make everyone else look like a fool. Senior reporter for The Athletic, and when you have a title like senior reporter for The Athletic, I'm going to hold you, my God, if I could actually speak, I'm going to hold you to some sort of standard. How'd you guys feel, and he was leading this charge, of people saying that the players ran Vic Fangio out of Miami? Does that sound correct to you guys?
I don't think so. I mean, again, I think that his heart was always there. I mean, I don't know that he was even going to stick around, even if, you know, things did mesh as well as it would have been. So to hear him blame the players, I mean, I think he's just going back to Javon Holland kicking rocks, right? I mean, my wife did ask me, you know, what's the biggest difference between the Eagles and the Dolphins? And I was like, he probably just felt like he wasn't at a daycare, right? He wasn't watching over little kids and didn't have that type of, you know, sort of role there in Miami. So I think it's all hosh-posh, and I didn't really thought it was just a way for the Athletic to kind of stir the pot a little bit and kind of throw the Dolphin fans in the turmoil that was going on as well.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, at the expense of possibly bad radio, I'm just going to have to agree with you, Josh. I think that it's sensationalist, really. Like, do I think that there is a world where the players literally ran him out of there, or do I think they just didn't advocate for him when McDaniel was exploring the idea of either of them parting ways or whatever maybe. I still do think that it was probably instigated by Fangio. But however that happened, I think if the players would have been like, oh man, we're going to suck if we lose Fangio, I think McDaniel might have fought a little harder maybe to keep him around. So I think that it's more like that.
And the Javon Holland, he kicked rocks after Fangio left. I truly think this is a scenario where it was oil and water. Both sides, I think, had a successful working relationship. You had players making Pro Bowls. Christian Wilkins, 10 sack season, results in an insane contract. Like, there was a lot of successes. But I think the moment Bradley Chubb's helmet comes off, like, you need people who can glue each other back together after situations like that. But when you have Fangio, who's going to, he always does his thing. He's an old head and that's A-okay. And you have the Miami Dolphins, who you mentioned it, daycare, for lack of better words. Like, if something bad goes wrong, these aren't people who are in already a position that, hey, we want to work together to figure things out. It's more of like, yeah, okay, let's, you know, you threw up at that party. I'm embarrassed. I don't think we should do this anymore. Like, that's, it kind of seems like that's how this relationship ended. And I think that's okay. But to kind of sit there and say, oh, you know, the Dolphins didn't realize what, like, he's like the most tenured defensive minded coach in the entire NFL. Of course, we understand how great of a coordinator he was in Miami. It's just so silly to think like, yeah, it was the kids and their hip hop. Vic Fangio couldn't keep up with it. Like, it's so, that's just such a dumb conversation to have.
Yeah, I mean, at the end of the day, it was probably more of a situationship than a relationship.
Exactly.
I do like, though, how Vic Fangio, I mean, he had a chance to kind of bury the Dolphins at times, and he was, you know, kind of took the high road, and he admitted it, right? I mean, the biggest thing that happened to Miami in the season he was here was the injuries. I mean, we could not overcome those injuries late in the year. Another thing I thought was interesting was, wasn't Javon Holland, he was pretty excited about that defense Vic Fangio was showing during the Super Bowl, wasn't he? I saw an article or something where he tweeted a positive thing about Vic cooking up a nice defense. So maybe he didn't kick the rocks for Vic Fangio, but the timing and all that just seemed like, you know, and maybe he's kind of backtracking now that he's a free agent too. So wish Vic Fangio all the luck. Can still surprise that they absolutely turned Patrick Mahomes into, you know, Linguini. That was still one of the craziest performances I've ever seen.
Josh, you mentioned Linguini. Let's talk about the kitchen. The Dolphins have way too many chefs. I'm just going to go ahead and say it. You wrote an article for the Finsider. The Dolphins added Bobby Slowick, former offensive coordinator for the Houston Texans, as the team's senior pass game coordinator. Dustin, we spoke about this real quick before the show, but one of the biggest questions surrounding the Dolphins and its fan base is Mike McDaniel and his inconsistencies as a play caller and a game day head coach. When you bring in someone 37 years old, super young, but he was just 2 years ago being talked about as a potential head coach candidate, is this someone that's coming in to call plays, do you feel?
I don't really think so. I think, you know, in that time, Bobby has gone from potential head coach candidate to kind of getting a chance at, you know, more responsibility on the offense. And while I think he's still proven to be a very good X's and O's coach, I think there's still a lot of questions around his play calling ability. And so to me, this feels more of a move that doesn't threaten necessarily McDaniel in the play calling department. But also as an additional person that can help out in the game day preparation aspect.
Yeah, and I think I even wrote that, is there too many cooks in the kitchen? I'm not really sure. I mean, I feel like bringing in a Slowick, a 37-year-old, you know, again, last season, this guy was, you know, in contention for some head coaching position. So it's never, it never hurts an offense to bring in another, you know, offensive mind. I did think it was interesting, though, about the whole Mike McDaniel and play calling, because that's something we've talked about as well. I mean, is he going to hand over play calling duties to one of these guys heading into this do or die season? I mean, it's definitely worth keeping an eye on, but I don't know if I'd really hand it over to Bobby Slowick, right? I mean, you'd probably have Daryl Bevel or Frank Smith or someone else there in the offensive room that you'd probably hand the reins too, but intrigued to see this, what it brings, and it's nice to have him reunited with his brother, who is also part of the Dolphins staff.
So you replace Vic Fangio with Anthony Weaver, who comes in and is absolutely awesome. Miami's outside linebacker coach was just interviewed for two different defensive coordinator positions. He didn't get it, but he was getting attention. So you see this tree of Anthony Weaver growing. What does it say that you have Mike McDaniel? And don't get me wrong, we're talking about the Miami Dolphins on February 12th. I don't expect everybody to know who Frank Smith, Daryl Bevel, Bobby, so all who these guys are. But it genuinely feels like the Dolphins have so many of these quote-unquote names, these guys who have kind of established themselves as offensive minds in the NFL. Like, you see defensive guys goes back to places like the Rams and Sean McVay, but is it a scenario where we have too many cooks in the kitchen? Is it a scenario like we have so many different ideas and so many different possibilities that in reality all the Dolphins need to do is line up and figure out how to get 2 yards? Like, that is the biggest weakness of this defense, and instead we're still trying to figure out Y equals God who knows what.
Marketers, are you ready to make an impact with audio advertising? People are hungry for authentic connections in a world buzzing all around us. How do you cut through the noise and truly reach your audience? Visit stateofaudio.com to see Odyssey State of Audio, the Trends Report. Uncover the secrets to high-impact creative. Learn how AI is revolutionizing the industry. And get ahead of the curve on measurement and audience trends. Don't just stay in the game. Win it. Visit stateofaudio.com and download your free copy.
Yeah, I mean, I honestly have to look a little bit more into Slowik's history, the schemes that he, you know, has been part of and all that kind of stuff. But ultimately, it kind of just comes down to McDaniel is, you know, the offensive head coach. And, you know, he's going to, whether he gives off, you know, play calling, he's always going to retain some level of override ability, right? So I think they might be setting themselves up to, if things don't turn around quickly, as far as like getting the plays in faster kind of stuff, they maybe make a move there, but I'm not really expecting McDaniel to do that. And I think that he would maybe pick this guy as, you know, part of the team because he doesn't really threaten him in that aspect.
Josh, is Stephen Ross preparing for an Anthony Weaver-led Dolphins that includes Bobby Slowik as offensive coordinator?
You should have put your tinfoil hat on for that one. Man, I can never say never, right? I mean, that's, man, my mind just exploded. That's a good question, Jake. I mean, I want to say no, but I mean, if they make a firing in the middle of the season, I mean, that could absolutely be the way. So, yeah, man, we need to put a tinfoil hat on for that. I did want to mention these two did work together for 5 years in San Francisco, so there is some familiarity there. He actually started out in the defensive side of the football, which I thought was interesting. So, again, I'm intrigued by it. It was a nice signing because, again, a lot of teams, I saw fans, you know, they wanted the Eagles to hire him as their offensive coordinator, another team that wanted to bring him in. Dolphins got him now as a senior pass game coordinator. Hopefully that doesn't mean Daryl Bevel's gone, because him and Tua Tagovailoa seem to have a great relationship, but it will be interesting to see how this thing works out midseason.
The Dolphins enter the 2025 season in a little bit of a depressing spot. They are $11 million over the salary cap. You have limited draft capital, and there's a lot of holes on this roster. That said, Dustin, looking back to last year, the offseason began, I think Miami was $50 million over the salary cap. There were some things that were coming down the pipe, the Tua contract, the Jalen Waddle contract as well, where you knew you could kind of free up some money. But just overall, in terms of big picture, how do you feel about the team's ability to retool the roster, specifically compared to last year, where it did feel like things were pretty tight? You know, it was the first time like Daniel had a first round pick to work with, where this year you kind of have an idea of the players you have in place in terms of the foundation.
Yeah, I mean, I think that you look at the where they're at with the salary cap and the dead money, and you look at, you know, the 2024 numbers across the league, like, I am not all that concerned about dead money going into 2025. I am a little bit concerned that this is the year that we kind of need to pay back some of that credit card debt, right? We really need to, and some of that comes with decisions in personnel. You know, there are a number of different things that we can do. There are a number of different things that can happen, but ultimately, this is going to be a year where we're probably going to incur a good amount of dead cap. Right now we're sitting at about $20 million, so not that much at the moment, but I think we're going to incur probably significantly more before the end of this offseason occurs. in the sake of, or for the sake of the long term, moves like things that you can do with Tyreek Hill may be expensive in 2025, but opens up 2026 for a huge 2026 salary cap availability. So there are some things that I think we're going to probably at least explore, and there are other things that we're definitely going to do, some restructures and stuff.
Yeah, I think Jake asked if we were confident, and that's my biggest thing. I just don't have any confidence heading into this year, right? Chris Greer and company, I mean, they've been around long enough that you want to hope in this do or die year where they have to, you know, get everything right and figure things out and make these tough, you know, restructures or cuts that they can do it. But I just I have to see it before I believe it.
So the Dolphins are $11 million over the salary cap, and they're still kind of recalibrating things following the pandemic in terms of, I think it was last year, the salary cap increased an extra just 8%, like an, oh, by the way. It was announced that way to the fans, but I think the league could kind of prepare for it a little better. I wouldn't be surprised if we see something like that happen again this year. But Dustin, I wanted to kind of bring up, I have five players here. I don't think even half of them might get cut, but I think it's worth a conversation here to free up some salary cap space. I want to start Raheem Mostert. He's scheduled to make $3.9 million next year, $1 million in dead money if he's released, $2.9 million in cap savings. This is somebody who led the league in rushing touchdowns 2 years ago. But my God, man, that running back team as or unit as a whole just looks so bad next or last year. You're a year older. Is it time to turn the page and maybe focus Devon Achane, Jalen Wright, and whatever else we can find?
I mean, there's a lot of ifs there, but, you know, just looking at it from a mile high perspective, you know, it would feel the time, you know, he's not going to be any less injury prone. And this, I'm coming at this from a, I'm a big Mostert fan.
Same.
And, you know, last year, I know the injuries, you know, were a factor. He had the chest injury and then the, was it a wrist injury or something or arm injury, some type of arm injury thing. But, you know, that stuff's not going to go away. And, you know, we can save almost $3 million. It might be time. And it kind of hinges on how ready we feel Jalen Wright is. Because to me, having Achane as your feature back is not a sustainable tactic. He's more like a receiver slash change of pace guy. So, yeah, and I think we probably draft someone, you know, in the third or fourth round, fifth round maybe, you know, if we get rid of Mostert, save that money and do something like that. But it might be time. That being said, I wouldn't be opposed to keeping him on.
I mean, I think you have to get rid of him at this point. I mean, they traded up for Jalen Wright. They had to have expected more out of him, right, his rookie year, at least to do something his rookie season. So I'm hoping that Raheem Mostert can stick with another team. You know, he did have an incredible year a season ago, but looking at that value and some of these cuts the Dolphins are going to have to make, I think losing Raheem Mostert, that's probably at the top of the list probably.
$3 million in cap savings. It's not such a no-brainer where if you wanted to move some other pieces around, you could find a way to keep him. But if you're really having deep, deep conversations about trying to pencil in $3 million, that might be a situation where the Dolphins might go forward. Dustin, is Miami's cap situation so restrictive right now that it's even worth having a conversation about someone like Jason Sanders, who entering the year, I think we agreed, was a little shaky, didn't really look like that former All-Pro that we grew to know, but my God, he had an incredible season, set to make $4.7 million, $1.4 million, which would mean $3.3 million in cap savings. So you'd save a couple million there, but I think he played well enough this year where we can kind of just shut up, move on about him.
Yeah, I'm not too worried about Jason Sanders' contract at the moment. I think, you know, if I have to look again, but I don't think his contract has like long-term, you know, issues for us. So, you know, if he goes back and has a bad year, you know, and the one good year was an aberration of what we can come to expect, and we can always move off, even possibly like mid-year, maybe you draft someone in the sixth round, you know. There's options there. I'm not too concerned about saving Jason Sanders money. I feel there's a lot of things you can do without losing players too to save money. That's absolutely not a move that I'm too worried about.
And that's probably what the Dolphins will end up doing, if we're being honest. But yeah, I mean, Jason Sanders has been absolutely money, Jake. We changed his, you know, the S from a money sign to a cent sign. I mean, last year he was absolutely incredible. So I don't think that this is the time to part ways with him, but I would have no issue with bringing in a camp body, a kicker. You know, maybe he struggles in spring and, you know, you do end up parting ways with him. I mean, I don't think the Dolphins 2025 season is going to hinge on Jason Sanders, whether he's on the roster or not. No disrespect, Jason Sanders.
Watch out, guys. Doge is about to hire me because I identified some savings here that we could save a whopping $2 million if we cut punter Jake Bailey. I cannot believe they brought back Jake Bailey for a second season. The pump-by-pump basis, I think, was fine, but he had some blemishes where it seemed like once every three games, one was just going 15 yards out of bounds, where I think you can draft a guy in the seventh round. You want to sign some unrestricted free agents. I think there were some hanging out outside of Hard Rock Stadium all last offseason as well. So hate to say it, but I think that's one where I think we can kind of say Jake Bailey at punter. I think the Dolphins could find something different, something better, especially with a new special teams coordinator coming in.
Yeah, if your number one reason to keep your punter is because he holds the ball well for your kicker, it's time to move on.
Yeah, that's what I was going to say. Unless they keep him around just to hold kicks. I mean, and that's just ridiculous. But I feel like we've seen that before from this staff. So never say never. But Jake, finding that $2.5 million, get rid of that right now.
two guys that I'd hang up and listen. I've seen people mention them as possible cap casualties. Someone like Alec Ingold, are you going to move on from his contract, $4.9 million, 3.2 of that would be in dead money just to save $1.7 million? I can get fully behind the idea that I love the idea of signing Alec Ingold. I thought Mike McDaniel would use him well. I think over the last couple of years, his role has become kind of skewed and it doesn't necessarily scheme all the time. So if the Dolphins wanted to get crazy and draft a tight end in the first round and have him kind of take up those snaps, I'd hang up and listen. But in terms of saving $1.7 million, Dustin, I don't really think the juice is worth the squeeze if that's why we're moving on from Ingold.
No, and even if we draft a tight end, you know, Ingold is not our Y. He's more of our H. And it just doesn't make a lot of sense to me. I think there's some sense in maybe restructuring his contract and kind of extending out that money a bit. But I don't think there's a ton of value in just straight cutting.
Yeah, I agree with both of you. I mean, what he brings to the run game is you know, a night and day difference. I just wish, like I think we talked before, Jake, that I feel like they leave so much meat on the bone with Alec Ingold, whether it's in the passing game or other aspects where he could maybe, you know, be more of a value. So I don't think they're going to get rid of him, but I could see, you know, didn't they say Tanner Connor can play that same role? I mean, wouldn't they love to see Tanner Connor step up and be that guy? But yeah, man, Alec Ingold, I don't think he's going anywhere. And I would be interested to see if they, you know, restructure that and push it out a couple more years.
Why on earth have people been bringing up Kendall Fuller as a possible cap casualty? And we'll start tying this into some possible post June 1st cuts, but Fuller, $8.2 million cap hit next year. He did struggle with some injuries this year, but when he was on the field, I thought he was a pretty good cornerback for the Dolphins, a solid number two. If he is cut, $5.4 million in dead money, only $2.8 million in cap savings. If he's designated as a post-June 1st cut, those cap savings go up to $6.8 million with only $1.3 million in dead money. But guys, I think about this. If you're trying to save $6.8 million, you're saving $6.8 million to sign another cornerback.
Or you're drafting a cornerback and you can use that $6.8 million on two offensive guards. I'm not really for cutting Fuller. I really like Fuller. I can see the argument that he's injury prone or that he could be potentially injury prone and maybe you can turn one player into two. That's another one I don't think would be in the top of basket for me as I'm reaching in. There are some very obvious ones that we haven't quite got to yet that I feel are much more juicy and, maybe a move like this is one that I get to, you know, after the draft, after free agency, and we're really like looking up against something like, oh, we really need this money for this other thing.
Yeah, this would be one of those instances where maybe a Will Johnson falls to him and they end up drafting him or something in the first round. And then you can, you know, then you have Jalen Ramsey, you have Will Johnson, then you also have Kader Kohou in the slot. But I thought Kendall Fuller played awesome when he was healthy. So I think the only reason people even brought this up is because he has been injury prone. I mean, he wasn't on the field when the Dolphins needed him most at times last year. So I could see the argument. But like you said, Jake, if you're going to need another cornerback too, you're probably paying well more than that to get one on the open market. Unless, of course, like Dustin said, you draft one. So I won't get rid of Kendall Fuller. I liked what he did when he was out there.
I'm for Teron Armstead coming back next year. But when you look at what the Dolphins are dealing with, they drafted their left tackle of the future last year in Patrick Paul. Teron Armstead, if he is designated as a post-June 1st cut, $15 million in cap savings, $7 million in dead money. Dustin, I mean, Teron Armstead, he was on the field 100% of snaps in week 18. I think week 16 against San Francisco was one of his best games of the year. I'm on board with seeing him come back. I thought he played well. He played the most snaps since 2020. Is there any scenario where this could start to be a little uncomfortable just because the NFL is a business? Teron Armstead's about to be the fourth highest paid player on a team that needs to push for the playoffs. He is going to make a boatload of money. Is this a scenario where the Dolphins say, hey, we know you played well, but we can't do this with the questions up in the air? Just makes it boil down to strictly a business decision. Do you see it being a simple question, I guess I should ask instead, or do you see that maybe this gets a little more complex than, hey, you were good last year, we'll see you on opening day?
I mean, it is more complex. You have, you know, the guy in waiting, you know, your starter in waiting in Patrick Paul. That being said, I think that unless he retires, it makes the most sense to keep him around. We don't, you know, having Patrick Paul as your rotation guy because maybe Armstead doesn't play the full season or whatever, that is not a bad situation to be in, I think. I think Patrick Paul, while he has flashed, I think he still has some more refinement in his game to go before I'm, you know, fully comfortable in him being a playoff caliber left tackle. Everyone knows that the game switches gears, you know, as we get into the playoffs, and I still have a little bit more that I want to see from him before I'm ready to be like, yeah, he's a guy that I think is ready to take us, you know, on the left tackle spot all the way deep into the playoffs. Yeah, I think it's just a good thing to have the options there. And having Keon Smith, you know, with Austin Jackson on the other side, I think tackle's probably a decent, you know, spot as far as, like, depth. Sure, we need, like, a new swing tackle, but, you know, we can get a guard tackle for that in the draft. I'm not too concerned at the moment there.
Yeah, I think it's a good problem to have. And I guess I would wonder if the Dolphins would even, you know, approach him with that, right? I mean, this guy has been a leader since he got here. We hear him at the end of the game when Tyreek Hill was spewing crap out of his mouth. You know, Teron Armstead was the guy that kind of, you know, was level-headed and kind of sees the bigger picture. So I feel like that stuff, you know, you really cannot put a price on. So I think at some point the Dolphins' offensive line will sort itself out, if we're being honest. We saw Teron Armstead's played like 10 games, I think, on average his entire career. So he's going to get injured, but for what he can do when he's out there, he's still at the top of his game. So if he wants to come back, I think the Dolphins will welcome him with open arms. But for that price, I mean, it might be something that they consider restructuring, or, you know, who knows what they might have up their sleeves.
So the $15 million that the Dolphins would save by designated Teron Armstead as a post-June 1st cut would be the second most money the Dolphins could save by designating someone as a post-June 1st cut. They would save the most money, $19 million, by designating Bradley Chubb as a post-June 1st cut. If you're in a scenario where you need to save salary cap space, I think that makes a lot of sense. If you're trying to hit the restart button, I think that makes a lot of sense. But just like with Teron Armstead, Dustin, I think the Dolphins are in no place to turn away talent. Especially when you saw what the Eagles did. When you have a difference-making unit, when you have a position group that you just don't see week to week, that can't be schemed against, that just breaks a game, I don't think you can let that talent walk away. So, Dustin, what are your early, I mean, it's February 12th, what are you doing with Bradley Chubb?
Yeah, I don't think, you know, if I'm GM, I would be even really contemplating cutting him. I don't think, you know, unless luckily we don't get to make, we don't need to make that decision, you know, until after the draft. So unless we get in the draft and, you know, at 13, we draft a guy, like at that point, yeah, maybe we go ahead and make that June 1st cut. But I think right now it makes much more sense to keep him on the books, but restructure him. I think it's a no-brainer if you're going to keep him to restructure him. I think you save half of his salary or something. It's like $14 million.
Yep.
That you save, and that puts you in cap green, you know,
just like that one move.
Yeah.
And the one thing I kind of forget about Bradley Chubb is right now he's 28 years old. So like you said, Jake, I mean, you heard Anthony Weaver discuss it. We've all talked about it. You know, the Chop Robinson, Jalen Phillips, Bradley Chubb, how insane that defensive line would be. I'd much rather sit there and see what this defense is capable of. And if you're Mike McDaniel, who traded, you know, him and Chris Greer traded for this guy, you know, they, you know, that's one of the many moves that is going to eventually, you know, be, he's going to look back and it's either going to make or break his NFL career. Bradley Chubb's one of them. So after you traded for him, you know, you didn't bring him back last year. I think they kind of just kept him in ways like Goku with that mask on in the little chamber, like he's just getting ready to come out and, you know, show what he's worth. So I hope, like you both said, that they can find a way to restructure, because getting that money to spend elsewhere and to also, you know, keep Bradley Chubb on the books a little bit longer, I think that would work out best for everyone.
Such a lame thing to say, but I absolutely love overthecap.com. And I was sitting there. It's like you start with the there's a scroll down menu. It starts with if you cut a player pre June 1st and then post June 1st, and then you get the trade scenarios for pre and post June 1st. Not often do you scroll down far enough to click restructure. But when I did and I saw that you're getting $13 million if you restructure Bradley Chubb, that is the most no-brain decision of Chris Greer's career. Think about this. Like, I understand everybody wants to get this off the books. Mike McDaniel and Chris Greer, their backs up are against the wall. This is a do-or-die year. You're telling me that not only I can retain this talent, I can clear up $13 million this year, and if I'm gone, somebody else can deal with it next year? It's a no-brainer. That's like the number one move the Miami Dolphins need to be doing is restructuring Bradley Chubb. Like, I was kind of starting to like understand, like, all right, like if we move on, Chop and Jalen Phillips, the good 1-2 punch, whatever, like there'll still be some growing pains, I think, there. But if you can clear up that cap space and keep him around, like, you're doing it 10 days out of 10, I think. It just seems like an absolute no-brainer. And then another restructure that I think the Dolphins could do if you want to start to free up some salary cap space, Tua Tagovailoa, you free up $19 million right there. Two restructures equals, what, $32 million? It doesn't seem too terrible.
No, and even long-term, restructuring Chubb, it has benefits beyond 2025. I believe you save double-digit millions, you know, in 26 and 27, too. So it's one of the most clear-cut moves I've ever seen. As far as restructuring too, maybe, I don't know, that one's a bit more complicated because of his injury history. Like, right now you kind of have this out in 2026 that, like, if he gets injured again this year, we can really like have a good conversation about, you know, beyond what his skill set is and what his ability is, like, is he the guy going forward after 2026 where we can basically get out scot-free? You restructure him, you lose that flexibility there. So there's value to it. It's that one's a bit more cloudy and complicated, I think.
And you don't need to do it.
Right. Yeah, there's still some other moves that I would probably prioritize over that one, like at least exploratory before I, yeah.
I just want to say I agree with you because, I mean, if you have an out next in 2026, I mean, based on everything we've seen, I mean, we all love Tua Tagovailoa, but if you can't stay healthy, I mean, they're going to have to eventually part ways. You keep hinting at it, Dustin. What other restructures are we looking at here, man? I want to hear what you have up your sleeve.
Well, I think there's just another aspect, you know, another move that you can do with a guy like Jalen Phillips. I think you could even, like, it sucks for him professional player, but his rookie contract is coming to an end with back-to-back knee injuries. That lowers his value significantly. And whether or not he would agree to it or not, that's a question, but I would certainly be offering him like a 3-year, $35 million contract, you know, kind of a shorter term prove it type contract, you know, that we probably in 2025, you know, backloaded a bit, lower his $13 million cap hit to maybe $4 million. You know, that's almost $9 million right there that we could save. Then there's Hill, you know, I think we can trade Hill. And depending on when you do that determines the savings. So like, because of the way Hill's contract is structured, it's not a signing bonus. It was an option bonus. And usually those are paid out on league year start, which is coming up here in March, I believe. The Dolphins kind of seem to have some foresight into this, and they made that due in August. So we have until August to trade him. And if we do that, $15 million of his guaranteed money goes to the new team, which would leave us with the $28 million in salary or signing bonus that we still have to pay. But that's basically the same as his salary now. I think we get $500,000 in cap savings if we trade him before the summer. Mm-hmm. But if we wait till after the summer, we can divvy up that $28 million between 25 and 26. So we would gain an additional $13 million in savings there if we waited into summer. So that's one option. Me, I would maybe consider trading him during the draft so that we can get a player to replace. But there's also the option of a summer trade. Let me think here. Yeah, those are the two off the top of my head. There's Chubb restructure, Jalen Phillips extension, Tyreek Hill trade. Those are probably the three juiciest that I would explore first.
I like the idea of the Phillips extension too, because if you consider you backload a contract extension, which is pretty just normal practice, but at Jalen Phillips' age, like if you backload that contract in a certain way, odds are he might not even see that year where you're giving him a whole new contract just in general if he outkicks the coverage of that extension. So I like that one quite a bit. What about restructuring someone like Austin Jackson? If you kind of have him around for a couple of years, about $7 million, nothing insane. But I think if you're talking about like you have your core, your tackles in place, you're keeping Armstead around, you have Patrick Paul for the future. And I know Jackson struggled with the injuries, but he looks pretty comfortable at right tackle. And if the Dolphins do what they're supposed to this offseason and invest that guard, Jackson's only going to look better. So I think that this is a scenario too, where if you kind of are tying yourself to someone like him for an extra year or two, that wouldn't be too, too terrible. And another scenario where Chris Greer can get, quote unquote, his guy paid and say, hey, if this doesn't work out, someone else deals with it.
Maybe I missed it, but did you say what savings would be on that?
$7 million. So nothing insane, but that's a good starting guard, I'd say. Not to get on a tangent, I don't think I want the Dolphins going after like a top three guard in free agency. I think that's the wrong way to go about it altogether.
Yeah, no, they should be filling, you know, gaps in the free agency and drafting a guy probably as that double dip, you know,
situation. Yeah.
So, yeah, I mean, if you can say, hey, we turned Austin Jackson restructure into potentially two offensive guards, you know, depending on what they take, right? Like if they take Aaron Brewer type contracts, we can absolutely get two guys.
Mm-hmm.
So
I think that's a great idea with Austin Jackson, Jake. I looked it up. He's 25 years old. So, I mean, to have him longer on the roster, I mean, yeah, it is crazy, right? I feel like he's been here forever. And up and down, right? It's been a roller coaster ride with him. But when he's healthy, he looks pretty well. So I would think that'd be a really good place to start. And again, it won't be an issue to have Austin Jackson on this roster long term.
And that's another thing, too. I'm glad you brought up Aaron Brewer. Like, there's risk in signing him. And I think overall, he's a net. What's better than a positive, a double positive for the Dolphins? Like, I think he's a really good player, but when you've gotten him and you invested in these traits and you identified a player who you don't have to pay top dollar for, you know that there are going to be some weaknesses in the game too. And then you look at the Dolphins and their short yardage struggles where they hit the nail on the head at center, but that means I think they have a little more, I don't know if freedom's the right word, but maybe even urgency. Like, you got to get the guards in place, because I even think by the end of the year, the Aaron Brewer love that we felt for most of the year was starting to dwindle, because the stout defenses up front were really diminishing what the Dolphins could do. So when you get those guards going, it only makes everyone else look better too. So I think that does. Hey, we fixed the offensive line. Look at that. Oh, man, it was good to be here with you guys. It was nice that we're sitting here February 12th, and it was a miserable season. I did the Finns TV recap show last night. If you haven't watched that, go check that out. We did the award show with them, and God, I love doing this, because for how much a season can suck, it's still fun to talk about this team somehow. So I appreciate you both, and thank you both for being here to do that.
Absolutely. Thanks for having me on, guys.
I'm just glad we're back, Jake. I'm glad I'm feeling a little bit better, and I'm glad we can come on here and talk about the team we love. I mean, no matter how bad they are, we'll be on here every week talking about the team we love.
During the off season, we still try to post twice a week. It's a little less frequent. We try to mix it up a little bit, kind of deal with whatever news is coming our way. So the best way to know if a new show is coming to subscribe to this podcast, iTunes, Spotify. We're also on YouTube, 560 WQAM, if you're interested on the video copy. But that is it. That is all the time we have today on another Dolphins podcast. Thank you all so much for listening. We will talk to you soon. But until then, fins up.
Fins up.
What's up?